Black City. Go figure.
Hi, my name is Helen Gunya-Brown, and welcome to my radio show called Mixed Tapes, where I will be celebrating the music of musicians of colour in the independent music world, because, well, we're all around and you should listen to us. Welcome to a new episode of Mixed Tapes. It's been a while since I've interviewed someone for the show, and what a treat it is to bring you the amazing and talented musician Lucinda Chua. That track I just played is called Golden and was from her solo debut album Yan, which came out about a year ago. Since then, Lucinda has gone from strength to strength, building a unique sonic world that translates beautifully into transcendental live shows. I've met Lucinda a few times, but never have had the chance to talk to her about her music and views on art and authenticity. This kind of interview reminds me of what a gift it is to be able to hear from other musicians and people working in the music world, and to celebrate in what the true objective is, to create meaningful and impactful art, to take joy in and to learn from the process, and to go deep into the essence. I hope you enjoy this conversation as much as I did. Hi, Lucinda. Welcome to Mixed Tapes.
Hi.
I wanted to first ask you, how has this year been for you so far?
I guess in the last 365 days, it's a couple of weeks back, it was like the 1 year anniversary of my record coming out.
Mm.
So I was kind of mad to think back on that.
Yeah.
I think that's been like a big part of my last year has been like releasing that. And yeah, it feels like a lot of time has passed, and also no time has passed. It's a strange kind of flexy time. But since the beginning of the Gregorian New Year, I took a lot of time out in January just to kind of like chill and recalibrate. And then since Lunar New Year, I've been in the States doing some shows.
Mm.
I came back and did a festival in Europe. And now I'm preparing for some shows I've got coming up in the UK with London Contemporary Orchestra in May. Nice. So it's been like back to work, but sort of in a slightly different mode.
Be your echo.
So you're based in London. Could you tell me a bit about the journey of how you got into music and sound, and how did you know that this was what you wanted to do?
I got into music really young, not necessarily through any choice of my own, but I started having piano lessons when I was 3. So I was really small. And I guess for as long as I can remember, music has always just been part of my life. But I didn't realize it was something that you could do for a career. Mm. I think that's not been since like more recently. I've always worked like multiple jobs or like been in like full-time employment and done music on the side. But it was 2018 when I kind of quit my day job and started focusing on music full-time. And I guess it's in the last 2 years that I've been focusing a lot more on my own work. So yeah, it's sort of just snuck up on me.
Yeah, so yeah, you released your debut album, Yan, last year, and then an EP, Reclaiming the Rose, recently. And could you tell me a bit about, I guess, kind of connected to what you just said, you know, the processes behind in creating the solo releases and how they came together?
So I guess like 2018 is when I put my first solo EP out, which was called Antidotes 1. Mm-hmm. And then in, I think that was 2018 or 2019, something like that. And then in the summer of 2020, I put out Antidotes 2, which was like the sister record. And I did like a double release of the two of them on vinyl. But by that point, I think I'd already started writing Yen. And I worked on that record. That was kind of like my main focus for pretty much a whole year. So it took up like a lot of space. And that was the first time when I was like consciously writing an album, which felt very different to just having a musical practice where I was making music and kind of like see what shakes out. It was the first time where I was like, okay, this has to be like a thing. There has to be like an intention and a concept behind it. And it felt like it needed to be something that was more than just a collection of songs or like a collection of sounds.
Yeah.
So I think I made that album very intentionally. And then I think Reclaiming the Rose was very much inspired by the community that I connected with once I'd released that album. And also very inspired by, I made 2 trips to China last year. For shows, and just connecting with fans in China was kind of wild. And that was like a big moment, and realizing that I had this connection to my ancestral homeland that will kind of transcend my biological family.
Yeah, amazing. Do you think the pandemic changed the way you thought about music, or like the way that you created around that time?
I think the pandemic sort of really shook a lot of things up for me. Like pre-pandemic, I was working as a session musician. So I was like touring all over the world. That was kind of like my main job. Obviously, like none of that could happen during COVID. And I remember there was like, I was booked to be on a kind of big festival tour in 2020. And I would get like alerts of my calendar popping up being like, it's Coachella Festival next week, or like, oh, it's going to be Fuji Rock, or it's Glastonbury. And I guess it was just this moment where I was like, wow, live music might never, ever happen again.
Yeah.
And so I just had this day where I had to go through and delete everything from my diary for the whole year coming up. And it sort of like gave me this existential crisis, because I was like, who am I if I'm not working? And so I guess like a lot of other people, I found myself unemployed because I couldn't do the thing that I'd been doing. And so that was like, that was pretty major. Mm. I had to think about like who I was outside of my job. And I guess that kind of like pushed me into exploring other parts of my identity and like figuring out what else was important to me, maybe outside of the identity that I'd built as a professional musician. And then that took me to some like really deep places that maybe I hadn't thought about much in life before. And then I took a big break from making music. I think I took 9 months off, because I just couldn't, just needed, I don't know, needed time away, and then came back to it. But it's definitely different.
So yeah, it's the world has changed, but yeah, I think it really, from people I've talked to, especially in like the ESCA music community, it kind of gave space for reflection and like a review of kind of how they make music and how it's almost perceived in the world in a way, because yeah, it's such a new collective that's kind of came out of everything that happened with the pandemic that
I think for me it was even more basic than that. It was like not just how do I make music, but like how do I feel my emotions, or like how do I edit my emotions, or how do I present myself and what do I hold back?
Yeah.
Or like, I think maybe I was like very much looking for the space and then shaping myself to fit inside the space.
Mm-hmm.
And I think it was like the beginning of an awkward and uncomfortable journey in learning how to like take up my own space. And like, it's easy to like articulate that through like being an artist because it's something that's tangible, but I actually think on a very, very basic level, as a like day-to-day normal person, like walking down the street, I don't know. I think I'd never really like taken time to think about, oh, what do I like or what do I want? Mm. I just sort of like rolled with everything. And it was definitely a moment for like reflection and like processing a lot of like thoughts and unlearning a lot of behaviors, maybe, and sort of like detangling the strings of life.
Yeah. Very existential.
Thank you.
So I'm always going on about the lack of diversity in the music industry. And I'm always drawn to the idea that if you can see it, then you can be it. Without, I assume, having many or any of these role models in the UK with an ESCA background, how did you know that you could be a creative and that you could feel seen in some ways?
That's such a good question. It's such a good question. And I don't know if there's like a single answer. I think it's like drawing inspiration from multiple different places and being inspired by people who have adjacent experiences.
Yeah.
You know, whether that be like, I don't know, I guess like working with Twigs was pretty phenomenal.
Mm-hmm.
And just seeing like how she built a team, who she chose to bring into her team. I think that made me realize, oh, wow, that's a choice.
You don't have to pick
person that everyone in the industry is working with because they're the best. It's like, if you take away this binary idea of like the best and the not best, it's like, it's really up to you to decide what feels good for you. And I think it really like made me believe in my own ideas a lot better. Just because there was like her, in her like creative team, there were just so many people of color, so many queer people. It was just such a like different space to anything I'd worked in before. It made me realize how we didn't have to spend our energy explaining or mediating, or like all of the energy could just go into the work and just be, there was no like translation. It's like we could just exist together. Mm-hmm. And that was kind of like a real revelation for me, getting to play Afropunk in New York and Atlanta and realizing like everyone just really wanted that to be a success because we all believed that it was important. Wanting that feeling of like wanting everyone to have a good time and everyone to like just like blossom, you know, right down to the security guards. They were just so gassed to be there, you know, which is like you think of, I don't know, other music festivals and they're trying to like shut the fun down or police the fun. Mm-hmm. Just like everyone. So it made me think like, it feels so good to be in spaces like this. Imagine if I could create spaces for other people like me so that we could have this feeling too. And I definitely think within the ESCA community, that's something that in the UK definitely accelerated after the pandemic. There was a real urgency to like connect and support and nurture each other and feel the sense of solidarity and to be proud of identity. But in terms of diversity and representation, this topic comes up so often. And I kind of feel like I'm ready to push past that to a point where it's about authorship, because it's not just about being seen. It's about who's the person who gets to choose.
Yeah.
I feel like we've definitely got way more diversity and representation from performers compared to when I was like a teenager. But within the industry, where is the diversity and representation there? Where's the authorship? You know, who is deciding? Who is commissioning? Who is the person with the money? Who and the power? Who gets to make choice? And I think like that's the thing that I'm interested in, is like we know what it feels like from a grassroots upward feeling in terms of community, but in terms of industry, there's still that void. And it's beyond empathy. I was talking about it with a friend of mine. He has like hearing loss and he's had it his whole life, but he only started wearing hearing aids like as an adult. And it was a really big kind of like wake up call for him to, I guess, to realize that there was this kind of communication barrier. And he was talking about, he started learning American Sign Language and how just like being in spaces that are centered around the deaf community, he feels so heard. And I was like, oh, I relate to that. But it's like more than someone holding space for you. It's like that is just the primary form of communication. And it is just so intuitive that it doesn't have to go through like a translation, or it doesn't have to be like someone making space so that you can be heard. It's just two people talking in a way that feels effortless. We have a shorthand, I guess.
Yeah, I know. I understand what you mean. It's that feeling of, yeah, not having that extra barrier or needing to filter, because there is a sort of understanding on a certain level that you wouldn't have with someone else.
And it's a lived experience,
you know? Yeah, yeah.
Not like you have to go away and read a book to understand, you know? And I think, like, I guess the pandemic changed things, and I guess everyone is at a different part of the journey.
Definitely,
understanding where things are at. And some people are just coming to this conversation very new, but maybe they're in, like, very powerful positions where they're important decision makers, and within their professional lives, they're incredibly qualified. But when it comes to, like, an understanding and empathizing, or being able to support and, like, meet needs of people that might be different to your own, maybe they're still very, very much in their infancy.
I think so.
I think we're kind of in this, like, awkward teenage years.
Yeah.
That's kind of like, you know?
Yeah, I think, like, that's true. Because it's a bit like
a lot of growing pains.
Yeah, because, you know, you have a moment like 2020, or you have these sort of points in our culture, but then throughout, the outcome of that always feels very tokenistic. And it's like, well, where are the actual, you know, processes and things that are going to continue to allow space for, you know, different types of people?
But even the language of allowing space, it's like we're still being given permission to flourish by someone else who gets to decide if we're worth it or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's the thing for me that is, like, so interesting. Like, when I went to China, obviously everyone's like, diaspora, what?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I don't care about that.
Yeah, yeah.
I'm Chinese and everyone else is Chinese. Yeah. And it's just like, whoa. I didn't know this feeling existed.
Because
my perception of what it means to be Asian is very different. I don't know. I hope that I continue to keep a global mindset.
It's more beautiful than night, and bluer than the sky. Higher to climb, higher and higher, till I fall, until I fall, until I fall. till I fall, till I fall. Till I fall, till I fall. Till I fall, and till I fall.
Well, this takes me to the next question, which was, you know, being from different cultural backgrounds and almost trying to bring some of these disparate parts together. Like, how do you reckon with like a Western music industry that still feels like really siloed away from the rest of the world? Because I have this thing too. You know, I went to Thailand recently and got to know creatives there, and it's sort of like, why can't I do music there and that kind of thing? But when you're stuck in like releasing music through like a Western label and that kind of stuff, it still feels so like so disconnected. And I just wonder, like, I don't know how to, yeah, have that kind of global mindset in a way and to keep pushing for your music to reach, you know, wherever you want it to reach.
I think you just got to do it.
Yeah.
I think... equally, it's easy to blame Western record labels, but like ultimately it's your life, you know, and if it's something that's important to you and you want to prioritize that, you don't need permission. You just got to do it.
Just do it. Yeah.
But I think it's up to the artist to decide. I don't think anyone else is going to think to ask you, hey, want to go and make a record in Thailand, you know?
Yeah.
And equally, maybe if some white label exec was like, hey, you should go make a record in Thailand, you might be a bit like, excuse me?
Yeah, I know. Like, what do you mean? Yeah.
Well, I think it's like, yeah, that's equally tokenistic, right? Yeah. So I think it's up to us to really identify, like, what's important to us?
Mm-hmm.
What are our values? How can we align our, like, work as artists and our, like, day-to-day living so that we're using it as a framework to live the values. I think that's it.
It is building your own framework, isn't it? Because you can't really, you can rely on the kind of like status quo types of, I'm thinking more not in creating music, but the kind of the stuff after that comes with, like, you know, what is expected of an artist and the kind of the realities of that. And I feel like there is like a lack of imagination sometimes, or like it is a bit like, well, there hasn't really been a framework for artists that want to, you know, who come from like different backgrounds to be able to reach different types of audiences.
I guess as well, it's like, it's an interesting time in the music industry, isn't it? Where I think inevitably record labels have their stands, and that following can trickle into the releases. But I think now more than ever, it's like artists attract audience.
Yeah.
That's something that comes from the artist. And I think being really intentional about how you communicate and who you, I guess, like releasing music as an artist, you're like creating a space for people to hang out in. That's how I always think of
it. Yeah, yeah.
And then I think about, well, I want to feel good in this space.
Mm-hmm.
I want my friends to feel good in this space. And so it's like just being mindful of designing a space that is sympathetic to those needs. And I think it's up to the artist to take the lead.
Love, love, love. I will hold the
Given that, yeah, the music industry is a kind of an interesting, very transitional time. How do you see the role of an artist now in our current times?
Ooh, juicy question. I don't know. I guess, like, also on the flip side, like, what a great opportunity to have a voice or have a platform, you know? I think for me, I just love working. I just love making things. I love inventing things. My favorite part of the journey is like the making.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
I find like the releasing really difficult. That's not really for me. But creating and inventing new worlds, coming up with ideas, like going deep into research and like really just getting to live it, that's my favorite part. And I just want to try and do that in a way that feels honest and is coming from a place of truth. And hopefully that will connect or resonate with someone. And so that's what's important to me, you know? I think like the industry will always be in flux, and it has a lot in the past as well. But I think maybe an artist's job is to not think too much about the industry and just focus on the craft. And a commitment to that.
Oh, high. Oh, high. How far. How deep. Until you feel it in the beat. Heart. I just want to feel something. I just want to feel something. I just want to feel something. Feel something. Feel it in the beat of your heart. Feel it in the beat. Feel it in the beat of your heart. Can you feel it in the beat of your heart? Something.
Or what is inspiring you right now?
I've been going to acting classes.
Oh, I saw some. Yeah, I saw that. That sounded like it really was quite an experience.
Man, it's like, it's been one of my favourite things that I've done this year so far.
Yeah.
Started in January and I did 2 months of screen acting classes and I think I'm going to carry on doing like specifically Meisner technique. But the thing that I love, I mean, there's, I feel like I could talk about this forever. I feel like it's the thing that I'm the most passionate about. I'm like, cello, who's she? It's incredible to be able to communicate emotions without an instrument.
Mm.
Like, that has just blown my mind. And then the other thing I'm loving, I mean, so many things, like the psychology of a character, figuring out what their objectives or their like intentions are,
mm-hmm.
and how that impacts how the words are delivered. Because it's mm-hmm. not so much about the words, it's about delivery. You know, I think there's so many crossovers with music, you know?
Yeah.
Not just about like the lyrics that we're singing, it's about how we sing them, and we can present them in so many different ways that can mean so many different things. But just really like honing in on that on such a basic level is kind of like blowing my mind. And then just like reading more about technique and theory. One of the things I've really struggled, I don't know if this like resonates with you, but one of the things I really struggled with about being a solo artist was there was no handbook.
Mm. No.
Like, obviously, you can, like, make the music, and that's something that we've probably been doing our whole lives. But when it comes to, like, making a record or releasing a record or doing interviews to talk about the record or performing the record to audiences, it's like we're, like, deep, deep method actors. And sometimes that's really scary.
Yeah.
But don't have the emotional tools to protect ourselves. Whereas like an actor can go on stage and like relive an emotion in a play in the theater night after night, but there will be tools and techniques that that actor will have learned to have some separation between the emotions that they're channeling and how they like de-character and like take that off at the end of the day. And almost like having those tools and techniques means that they can be more brave and more daring in their performance, because it's kind of like boundaries and a bit of like protection there. So I think even just like the little bit of work that I've done and the reading I've done, it's just like in acting, there's so much like technique, emotional technique around like, I guess like the psychological realism of performing. And it just made me think, wow, no wonder like so many musicians like struggle with mental health.
Well, yeah, exactly. Or,
like, issues or like alcoholism or just, like, you know, like the adrenaline come downs and the dopamine highs and just the pressure of being in the spotlight and the pressure of like meeting fans and people like having very, very like visceral connections with the work and it bringing up a lot of emotions for them and like knowing how to fight for that. It's like, there's no training for that. There's no training of like, like, I want to do these things, but I also want to be a good person, but I also want to like not hurt myself.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think like acting as sort of like a parallel, like practice, perhaps it's just giving me the illusion that there's some kind of like order and like logic in this chaotic life. Even if it's a placebo, it's like, oh, I feel prepared for this. And even though this is like so out of my comfort zone, there are tools that I can draw on that can make it feel manageable.
Where were you before? Underneath the soil, in amongst the dead, looking for the light, the light. I see my face through a thousand mirrors. Look at me looking back. See my face through a thousand mirrors. In the middle of the maze, there's a rose garden. I found myself. I found you. In the middle of the maze, there's a rose garden. I found myself. Inside of me, like a restless energy, to be who I am to me. See my face through a thousand mirrors. Let me catch my breath. See my face through a thousand. In the middle of the maze, there's a rose garden. I found myself. I found you. In the middle of the maze, there's a rose garden. I found myself. I found you. I found you. I found you. I found you.
With this year ahead of us, can you tell me what's coming up for you? Any upcoming shows or anything you can reveal?
So I'm working towards two shows in the UK. I'll be performing accompanied by London Contemporary Orchestra, which is very exciting. It's going to be the biggest band I've ever played with. I'm working on the arrangements at the moment because there'll be like a string section, a wind section, I think.
Wow.
I think I've got a harpist. Some percussion. So we're going to be performing music from Yen, Antidotes 1 and 2, and Reclaiming the Rose. So it's kind of like a mini retrospective of my songwriting work so far with an orchestra. And that's going to be, I'm playing in Bristol on May the 1st and at Barbican Milton Court on May the 2nd. And then towards the end of May, I think it's May 25th, I'm joining Speaker's Corner Quartet in an Arthur Russell tribute. And that's kind of like a multi-artist evening.
Wow.
And that's in the main hall at Barbican. And I think some of the other guests, like Lorraine James will be there, Christine the Queen, Nabia Iqbal, Kate Le Bon, like lots of like incredible artists. And obviously Speaker's Corner Quartet, who are just like the loveliest guys in the world ever. So that will be a really, really fun celebration of the music of Arthur Russell and maybe also some improvised music too.
Amazing. Thank you so much. Wow. Thank you for being on Mixed Tapes.
My pleasure. Thank you for having me.
Slack City.